You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up after 7, it's Storytelling with a Beat on Snap Judgment. Tonight's theme, One in a Million. There are lots of things that are never supposed to happen, but once in a while, something slips through the cracks. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
Now, when it comes to achieving success in our professional and personal lives, it seems like we're always chasing after more. We need more resources to make more money. We need more staff to get more work done, and we want to provide more for our families to make them happy. But does any of that actually make us happy, more successful, or really improve our lives?
Our next guest makes the case that instead of being chasers, we should be stretchers, or people who make the most out of what they already have. He says that by relying on our resourcefulness, we actually find more creative and productive ways to solve problems, innovate, and be more engaged by our work and personal lives.
Scott Sonnenschein joins us now. He's a professor of management at Rice University. He's the author of the new book, Stretch, Unlock the Power of Less and Achieve More Than You Ever Imagined. Scott, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Scott, we've heard the phrase, a lot of us, less is more. Sometimes we might meet it with some skepticism, but make the case that actually it can be a positive way to approach work and life.
We often think of putting ourselves in position of constraints as something that we want to avoid, but what the research shows is that when we have our backs against the wall, either because our objective circumstances warrant it or because we get ourselves into this mindset, we're able to look at all of the resources around us, whether it be physical things like products or objects or immaterial things like relationships, in much more creative ways. We give ourselves a license to use resources in less conventional ways that allows us to actually get more done.
And this is something that you have been through yourself, especially during your time working in Silicon Valley. Can you talk about what happened with that?
Yeah, I was in Silicon Valley during the dot-com boom and bust, and it was a crazy time to be out there because people judged metrics of success not so much on what they were doing, but on the resources they were acquiring. It was always a race for, can we get more venture capital without actually thinking, what are we going to do with all of this money? How many employees can we hire each week? How many customers can we get, even if they're actually not profitable? So the focus became accumulation. It's this idea I call chasing, which is when we orient all of our energy, all of our efforts on trying to get more resources without actually reflecting what are we trying to accomplish, what are our goals. So we end up mindlessly accumulating lots of resources that, one, is really draining. It hurts our satisfaction. It makes us feel inadequate because there's always someone who has more. But two, and more importantly, it takes our eyes off of what it is we're actually trying to get out of life.
You mentioned chasing, and that's a key concept in your book, and it's matched up against what you see as a more positive concept, and you know, in the title of your book, a stretch, stretching. What do you mean by that?
Right. Stretching is about taking what you have and finding better uses for it. Chasing is simply the idea that if we have more, we can do more. Stretching is that nice contrast that says it's not so much what you have, it's what you actually do with what you have that matters. It's about unlocking that natural creativity that we all have and using our resources in more productive ways.
And you open your book with a story about someone who did stretch, the owner of a small brewery, and he was able to successfully compete with some of the big giants in that area, and he did it by staying small and stretching with what he had.
Right, because when we're stretching, I'm not saying that you're giving up on trying to achieve great things. It's actually quite the opposite. You could achieve really wonderful things. So in that case, it's the brewer, Dick Yingling, and what he was able to do is, well, lots of the competition were going under. They were going bankrupt, or they were selling their businesses to large brewers. He reflected on what his goals were, which is, I want to keep a family business, but I also recognize that growing into a absolutely humongous company is not part of my goal. I want to build a very successful company, and he built an enormously successful company doing it, but he limited the number of markets he went into. He limited the advertising budget that he had, and he was able to slowly grow. And you see the same pattern if you look at the history of the dot-com era, where about 50% of the dot-com companies went out of business, but those that survived tended to follow a very similar pattern as Yingling did with his beer company, which was growing slow, being mindful of what your goals are, and recognizing that if you're going to try and hit a home run on a short amount of time period, there's more likely than not the chance that you'll strike out.
Talking to Scott Sonnenschein. He's the author of the book Stretch, Unlock the Power of Less and Achieve More Than You Ever Imagined. Want to get into how we can actually put this into practice, Scott? And a theme that seems to come up all through your book is we need to figure out what we want in the end, what our expectations are before we can figure out how best to use our resources for it.
Right. And the problem is too often we engage in what psychologists call mindless accumulation. So in one study I talk about in the book that was done by Christopher Shi at the University of Chicago, he had people come into his laboratory and he said, okay, I'll give you the chance to earn some chocolate. But here's the thing, you got to actually work for the chocolate. So there were two stages of the experiment. In stage one, you had to press a button as you were listening to nice leisurely music, and that button interrupted that music with the sound of a saw cutting wood. In the second phase, after you earned your chocolate, you were able to eat the chocolate. Now, what happened, of course, is people overworked. They kept pressing the button, listening to the saw, having to do that work to press the button, and they couldn't possibly eat all of the chocolate that they had earned. So he imposed a cap in the next series of studies, and then what that cap did is it had people better calibrate because it literally prevented them from possibly earning more. But what's most interesting, I think, about this study is that people who had the cap, who were told that they had to stop working, both had more satisfaction when they were doing the work to earn the chocolate, as well as more satisfaction when they were actually eating the chocolate. Because what that cap did is it made them more mindful of the goal. The goal was not simply get as much chocolate as possible, because there's only so much you can eat. The goal was to get enough chocolate to keep you satisfied.
But isn't that kind of antithetical to the world that we live in? I mean, we're taught to be ambitious, and being ambitious means shooting for the stars, in this case, accruing piles of chocolate, and that's what you're supposed to do, isn't it?
Well, I think there's a distinction between being ambitious and achieving your goals. Now, we can have very ambitious goals, but all too often we forget what our actual goals are. When we focus so much on trying to, you know, get the bigger budget at work or the larger office or the bigger house, we're not thinking, well, are those actually really our goals? In some cases, they might be our goals, and that's okay. But in many cases, we're simply doing these things because we see other people around us doing these things, and we forget about what our actual goals are. So there's people in the book that I profile that, you know, running very successful businesses, and they had a choice to make. Do I want to take some outside money and grow this business and try and do an IPO with it and make it a billion-dollar business, or am I more satisfied running a $30 million business that gives me more control over my business, maybe a better work-life balance? So people have lots of different goals, and it's okay to have really ambitious goals, and lots of people have run very successful businesses by stretching towards those ambitious goals. But we need to be mindful of what those actual goals are, and too often I don't think we are.
And you don't just talk about business in the book. You also apply this to the creative sphere, and I love that you gave an example of Dr. Seuss writing Green Eggs and Ham. It is his birthday and Read Across America Day. Can you talk about the limits that made Green Eggs and Ham happen?
Yeah, so what he did is he had a bet with his editor that he wouldn't be able to write the book by only using 50 words. And, you know, that's a really hard thing to obviously do. And he was able to readily do that bet. And we can do the same thing when we think about our lives, whether it be how we impose time constraints or how we try and do something without the traditional resource that we would use. And it turns out that we often overestimate what we need to accomplish our goals, and we underestimate the versatility of the resources that we have. And the Dr. Seuss example is a prime example of that. You would never think you could write one of the all-time best-selling books only using 50 words. And in fact, I argue that one reason why it became so successful is because he only used 50 words.
Does this tie in at all to the research on the paradox of having choice, that when there's too much choice, we freeze up and we're unhappy with what we picked, but when there's fewer choices, we're happier?
Yes, I think that the choice overload research that people like Barry Schwartz have done is a really good example, because, again, our intuitions are we want more choice, and more choice would make us better. That's how a traditional economist would approach the problem. But it actually turns out that by having so many choices, we overload how we can possibly think about things. How many, you know, pairs of different styles of jeans can you possibly look at and consider in your choice set at the store? So there's definitely a tie-in to thinking about choice overload.
you give some exercises to try this in our daily lives, and some of them involve, okay, taking that thing, like a kid's birthday party, I think is one example you give. You could do, you know, sky's the limit, as much money as you want to spend. You suggest, we're going to do this kid's birthday party, we're going to spend $25, and we're going to make the most out of that. Can you talk about how we can learn from an exercise like that?
Right, because again, until we actually try this, we just assume that you can't possibly get stuff done when you impose these types of constraints. So even this past birthday party for my older daughter, we tried this exercise and didn't spend a lot of money on her party, and we had this nice scavenger hunt where people foraged around the park and look for different types of resources that you can make a little device that you can drop an egg from 10 feet, and they had an absolute blast, and they had a blast for several reasons. One is, and I think children are a prime example of this, is that they are naturally creative and want to explore using things in different ways. The problem is all of our institutions, whether they be schools or even our families, and certainly by the time they work, try and stamp out that type of flexibility, thinking, and resources. We tend to try and teach people how to use things in very specific ways. You want to get a nail into the wall, you want to use a hammer. You wouldn't even think about using the bottom of your shoe if you didn't have a hammer around. So it makes it hard to get into this mindset of using things very flexibly, because we're told that the best way to solve problems is to go find the perfect tool, go acquire the additional resource. So when we put on these constraints, whether it be how much money we spend on a birthday party or what type of objects we use to solve a problem, like getting a nail into the wall, we start to begin to teach ourselves that actually what we have around us is a lot more valuable than we realize.
We're talking right now with Scott Sonnenschein about the power of resourcefulness and why being more resourceful can improve our professional and personal lives. He's the author of the book Stretch: Unlock the Power of Less and Achieve More Than You Ever Imagined.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What was a situation in your life that maybe caused you to be more resourceful? What happened and how did that turn out? And do you think that we're more innovative when we're forced to work with the materials in hand? Maybe they're a little more limited. Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're continuing our conversation with Scott Sonnenschein, professor of management at Rice University. He's the author of Stretch: Unlock the Power of Less and Achieve More Than You Ever Imagined.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you practice this idea, less is more? Have you had to be resourceful in your job, in your life? Do you do your best work when given limited resources of money, material, time, and what questions do you have about being more resourceful? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we take our first caller. Now we have Eric joining us in Hazel Green. Eric, hi.
Good morning. Good afternoon. I love this idea of resourcefulness. I the story I have about being resourceful is I used to be a high school band director, and my high school band was about ready to march at Disney World. Took the kids all the way down there, and they were ready to go. And my drummer comes to me and says, my snare is broke. My drum is broke.
Ooh.
And we just happened to be standing next to a dumpster, and I was able to pull out a coat hanger and wire it up, and it worked perfectly.
Wow. So you did some dumpster diving, and you fixed the drum. Eric, that's a great story. And what do you think about that, Scott? A good example of resourcefulness there.
Yeah, it's a terrific one. I actually have a section in Stretch called From Trash to Treasure, and that seems like a perfect example of it. And it's about how do we get into this mindset where when the right tool isn't there, we don't freeze up and say we've got to stop what we're doing, but we look immediately to our surroundings, find things around us, and give them new meaning and new uses, and they're able to move on towards our goals.
Yeah, don't you have a section in your book where you talk about how kids can remake their toys instead of buying new ones? They can just combine old ones in new ways.
Right, and you give new life to toys that way. I've got a younger daughter who likes to play with Elsa dolls and Shopkins, and both of them grow stale after a while. But when you set up the story that Elsa got a new bag of Shopkins today, how is she going to play with them? Suddenly, both become a lot more valuable, and that takes care of entertainment for the day.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to Anthony with us in Milwaukee. Anthony, hi.
Hey there. How you doing? Thanks for having me this afternoon.
Now, what did you want to tell us about Anthony?
Well, it was a couple of different things, but one was ancestrally in my lineage, which being an African American, you know, some soul food recipes or just recipes in general, how we prepare and what we prepare, you know, as far as in the way of food goes, were out of not necessarily what we wanted, but, you know, what was readily available at that time. And, you know, those things were limited. So they had to be, you know, rather creative to come up with meal plans to satisfy and maintain, what they had going on with limited resources. And secondly, it's unfortunate, but it's absolutely true, and there are some brilliant minds behind bars. You know, even those in solitary confinement with the least amount of access to, you know, anything that you might want or need, but they're able to, you know, do and come up with amazing plans and tools. And, you know, you'd be amazed, just like Martha Stewart brought home her prison recipe book, you know, and those are things that people come up with because, you know, they can't go to the grocery store. You know, they shop at a window, and, you know, you got a lot of high starch, high sugar, high salt things, but, you know, there's still things that you can prepare and are prepared. And, you know, as you see, you know, she came home and made money with that, you know, in concert with what she already had going on.
Anthony, thanks for the call. So a couple of situations, lack of access to resources, poverty, and an extreme situation, incarceration, Scott. Anthony's seeing a lot of resourcefulness in those situations.
Right, and actually food is a great example where you see this. I spent a bunch of time studying food trucks, and that's a very resourceful industry itself with limited resources, lots of constraints in terms of the cooking experiments. And if you actually go back even to meat rationing during World War II, I mean, the origin of the meatball itself, too, and how you combine it with breadcrumbs was a way of dealing with, not having enough meat. And I think that's a way that we tend to think of resourcefulness, is that when our backs are naturally against the wall, that's when we go and activate it. And what I'm trying to get across in Stretch is that same type of thinking we can also use when we're in better times, because it helps us focus on what our goals are and helps us achieve those goals by making the most out of what we have, even if it's relative abundance.
Let's go back to our callers now. We've got Denise on the line in Cashton. Hi, Denise.
Hi, thanks. I really like this conversation. As an artist, I like to limit my palette to just two colors. And that way it pushes me into a deeper level of creativity. And I think my best work comes out of limiting my palette as opposed to having the entire rainbow in front of me.
Interesting. Denise, have you always done that, or is that something new you're working with?
It's kind of like the other callers had said, that when you only have certain colors available and you're not going to go out and buy more, it's out of necessity, and also it makes it more fun. So it's just sort of been my style.
Denise, thanks for that. And Scott, getting at that innovation there that we can find by putting some limits on ourselves or acknowledging and being okay with our limits.
Right, and I think Denise's intuition is right. She's actually in the same path that Claude Monet took. And one of the things that Monet was really known for was his imposition of constraints. And if you look at the history of the way that he painted, he kept finding new ways of imposing constraints on him, such as, you know, light-dark contrasts. And what that does is it teaches what makes someone a terrific painter or terrific at anything isn't that they can just do it in one way. It's that they can do it in lots of different ways. And every time we impose a constraint on ourselves and we change the rules of the game, we learn how to do things differently and potentially better. And that's the way that we keep growing.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Scott Sonnenschein, author of the book Stretch, Unlock the Power of Less and Achieve More Than You Ever Imagined. Back to our callers now with Sam on the line in Madison. Sam, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And you might have touched on this earlier in the program, but resilience is something that people have talked about being restricted in people. So I just wanted to know if your guests had any comments on resilience as it pertains to being resourceful, and if some people are just more prone to being resourceful or not.
Thanks for the call. Scott, what do you think?
Well, I do think that when we're acting resourcefully, we're able to be more resilient because we're not getting held back by a setback, and we're recognizing that we might not have the ideal tools or materials or enough time, but that doesn't mean that we have to stop or that we should stop working towards our goals. So resourcefulness is definitely one factor that can drive into resilience. In terms of whether or not resourcefulness is something innate, I don't think it is. I think that there's some type of individual differences that people have in creativity that might make them more capable at first glance of acting resourcefully. But what the research shows is that it's actually not so difficult to get into this type of stretching mindset and simply thinking about scarcity, even if scarcity isn't in your current environment, can put you into this mindset. So it's very much a learned skill that anyone can do, whether they have a little or whether they have a lot.
And Scott, to just briefly as we wrap up, can you leave us with one concrete piece of advice or tip to try to get into that mindset?
I would focus on trying to impose constraints on ourselves. Now, we might have different access to resources and be in different types of circumstances, but if we just get a taste of what it's like to act with a little less than we think we actually need, we're going to learn that we actually sometimes can do more with less.
We'll leave it there. Scott, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you again for having me.
That's Scott Sonnenschein, professor of management at Rice University. We've been talking about his new book, and we've got a link to some suggestions, by the way, on the Central Time Facebook page. His book is Stretch, Unlock the Power of Less and Achieve More Than You Ever Imagined.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.